Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
This is an ABC News special, remembering President Jimmy Carter.
My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president. I say to you quite frankly that the time for racial discrimination is over.
The challenge was great, and the risks were high, but so was your determination.
The Camp David Conference should be renamed. It was the Jimmy Carter Conference.
From ABC News headquarters, here is correspondent Aaron Katursky.
Jimmy Carter, the 39th president of the United States, has died. President Carter served just one term, but was most effective after leaving office, redefining his image post-presidency through tireless work alongside his wife and childhood sweetheart, Rosalynn. Together, through the Carter Foundation, they promoted health, human rights, and justice across the globe, all while maintaining a fierce commitment to faith, family, and Southern roots. ABC's David Muir with more now on the life of Jimmy Carter and those pivotal moments that shaped his legacy.
He was the boy from Georgia, from the small town of Plains to the presidency.
My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president.
Growing up on a peanut farm in a home with no running water or electricity, he would forge his own path, an outsider determined to take on a corrupt Washington and to try to turn the page.
I say to you quite frankly that the time for racial discrimination is over.
His path to the presidency began in Plains, valedictorian of his high school, graduate of the Naval Academy, and after running the family business, he would turn to politics. In 1970, Carter was elected governor. But so unknown nationally, when he came onto the game show What's My Line, no one knew who he was.
Is this anything to do with the world of fashion?
No.
Yet in 1976, there was a hunger in this country for his plain-spoken promise to be honest with the American people.
My name is Jimmy Carter. I'm from Georgia.
Yes,
I'm going to be the next president.
And this outsider would become the Democratic nominee.
As a candidate and as a president, I'll never tell a lie.
After Richard Nixon's scandals and Gerald Ford's controversial pardon, voters were drawn to this new face with a post-Watergate message. Carter's campaign fueled in part by rock and roll.
I want to introduce to you the great Allman Brothers.
He would later count Bob Dylan and Willie Nelson among his best friends. And it would all help launch a relative unknown to victory.
ABC now projects Carter is the winner with 272 electoral votes.
Wow, look at that.
He said he was surprised the first time he heard the words, President Carter.
It was kind of a shock to me, but I felt ready for it and prepared for it.
And determined to avoid formality, James Earl Carter Jr. would take the oath of office as Jimmy.
I, Jimmy Carter, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And
his wife, Rosalynn, at his side. They married when he was 21, fresh from the Naval Academy. She was 18. And during his improbable journey, Carter's advisors would call Rosalynn his secret weapon.
I look forward to consulting closely with him on a regular basis.
Human rights would drive his foreign policy. He helped forge an historic peace agreement between Israel and Egypt, which still stands today.
I'm so proud of both of you. God bless you.
Ahead of his time, he was the first president to warn of climate change, installing solar panels on the White House. But the setbacks at home, rising inflation, growing gas lines, would wear on the American people.
Good evening.
issues he tried to address in what was later dubbed his Malaise speech, though he never used that word.
It is a crisis that strikes at the very heart and soul and spirit of our national will.
And Carter would soon face another crisis. After Iranian militants seized American hostages at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, the president seemed powerless.
The American hostages were blindfolded, handcuffed, and marched out on the U.S. Embassy's front steps by the revolutionary students.
My thoughts and my prayers for our hostages in Iran are as though they were my own sons and daughters.
An American rescue mission failed, and Carter would lose to Ronald Reagan.
The president, we hear, is preparing his own concession statement. What we may have at the end of all of this is the biggest landslide we've seen in years.
And after 444 days that gripped the country, the Iranians released the American hostages on the same day Jimmy Carter left the White House.
I think that was the happiest day that I've ever had, not in laying down the burdens of the presidency, which I did not want to do, but in just knowing that those hostages were free.
Carter was just 56 when he left the White House, unsure how he would define his future.
We didn't know what we were going to do the rest of our lives, and we decided to take on projects that no one else wanted to do.
But Carter would redefine the modern post-presidency. He worked with Habitat for Humanity. And through the Carter Center, he traveled the world with Rosalynn to eradicate disease, monitor elections, and to promote human rights. All work that won the former president the Nobel Peace Prize in 2002.
We can choose to alleviate suffering. We can choose to work together for peace.
In August of 2015, he revealed skin cancer, melanoma, had spread to his brain.
I've had a wonderful life. I've had thousands of friends, and I've had an exciting and adventurous and gratifying existence. But now I feel, you know, that it's in the hands of God, whom I worship, and I'll be prepared for anything that comes.
But his faith and his strength would carry him through. And crowds would still line up at the tiny Baptist church in Plains, Georgia, for the former president, where he would return to teach Sunday school, just as he had for decades.
Let them know what Christ means to you.
Those lines, a poignant tribute to a president who may be most admired for what he did after he left office.
It's been the best part of my life since I left the White House, but I really have been both gratified and honored and pleased and excited to be the president of a great country.
The Carters had recently marked 77 years of marriage. After the former president lost the former First Lady Rosalynn Carter, he was determined at 99 and in hospice to be there to honor his wife. He went to the church in a new suit that had been made for him, wearing a blanket over his lap with the image of his late wife. Jimmy Carter often said marrying Rosalynn was the pinnacle of his life, more than any presidency.
Staying with me all this long has been the most wonderful thing in my life.
He's pretty wonderful in my life, too.
We'll be back in a moment.
Remember the last time your family visited the forest? It's a place of wonder and imagination for the whole family, where stories come to life, and it's closer than you think. Ready to plan your next visit? Make the forest part of your story today at a local park near you, or find one at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Spending time in nature improves kids' fitness, creativity, confidence, and other important skills. Nature Rocks helps families get out into nature by showing you places to go and what to do in your area to get kids outside and really having fun in nature. You can search activities by age, time available, and even weather conditions. Playing in nature is good for the whole family. So visit nature.org, Nature Rocks, for helpful tips and resources. And then, get outside.
Disney Hits Podcast. Every week, go inside the stories of your favorite Disney songs with host Leah Delion Hayes.
Today, we're sailing to the island of Montanui to dive into the Disney hit song, How Far I'll Go, from Moana.
We'll also hear from the filmmakers, actors, and composers who brought the songs to life.
I remember pitching Bruno, this is a chance for a group number.
Check out the Disney Hits Podcast, the happiest music podcast on earth, wherever you stream podcasts.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time. Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is where the newsmakers come first in the morning to be heard. America's number one morning show, Good Morning America. Prince Harry.
How would your mom feel about your relationship with your brother now?
Failed crypto boss Sam Bankman-Fried.
I can't imagine what it feels like to go from $20 billion to $100,000.
Yeah.
Are you worried about going to jail?
Michelle Obama.
You write that you have low-grade depression. Mm-hmm. How'd you get out of that?
ABC's Good Morning America.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces. Just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
To some people, the sound of a baby babbling doesn't mean much. But that's not necessarily true. By 6 months, they're combining vowels and consonants. By 9 months, they're trying out different kinds of sounds. And by 12 months, their babbling is beginning to take on some meaning. Especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Early screening and intervention can make a lifetime of difference and unlock a world of possibilities. Take the first step at AutismSpeaks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
You're listening to an ABC News special, Remembering President Jimmy Carter. Once again, here is correspondent Aaron Katursky.
Jimmy Carter, the 39th president of the United States, has died. He grew up in the Deep South, and though he had both white and black friends as a boy, the young future president saw firsthand how racism and inequality affected the lives of so many African Americans, particularly when it came to education. He said later it was a powerful force that pushed him into politics. President Carter released an autobiography some years ago, A Full Life, Reflections at 90. He talked about it with my colleague George Stephanopoulos.
Mr. President, nice to see you again.
It's nice to be back. Thank you.
I love the title of your book, A Full Life.
Well, it has been a full life.
That's about all you can ask for at 90, isn't it?
That's true, yes. And it's been a very diverse life, but enjoyable in almost every case, and exciting, challenging, unpredictable, adventurous.
One of the things I was surprised to read, though, right on the first page of the book, is that it wasn't in any real way a planned life. You say you ended up in the White House after a series of somewhat peremptory decisions.
I did. When I was a child, until I went off to college, I wanted to be a naval officer and go to the Naval Academy. Nobody else in my father's family had ever finished high school. And to go to college was a big ambition for my parents and me. And there were only two, you know, famous and free universities in America. That was Annapolis and West Point. My daddy was in the Army, but I had a favorite uncle who was in the Navy, so I wanted to go to Annapolis. So when I was 8 years old, if you'd asked me, what do you want to do when you grow up? Like a parrot, I would say, I want to go to Annapolis and be a naval officer. So that was my first career, and then I got out of the Navy and became a farmer and a businessman for 17 years, and then decided to run for state senate to try to save the public school system, and then went from there to governor and then to president. But each step was independent and not planned ahead of time.
But can you identify any one moment, any one decision that propelled you to the White House?
I think it was my concern originally that I got into politics about the threat to the public school system when the preeminent Democratic candidate would hold up one finger and he'd say, no, not one. If one black child entered a classroom in the South, in Georgia, we'd close the public school system down. I was chairman of the public school system then, the county school board, and I decided that I would run for the state senate kind of naively to save this public school system. So the race issue has been a major factor in my life all the way through.
You had that declaration right after you were elected governor. The time to end racial discrimination is over.
That's right. And that was fairly late in the history of civil rights. But it was so remarkable in Georgia in 1971 in January that 2 weeks later I was on the front cover of Time magazine just because I said the time for racial discrimination is over in Georgia.
And you look back to 1971 and think, on the one hand, we've come so far, elected an African-American president, but these problems still so persist.
We kind of took it for granted that we would eliminate the concept in America that whites were superior in some way to black people. And I think we let our guard down, and now the rash of news reports about police mistreatment of black people and horrible events in Charleston, South Carolina, have kind of brought it to the forefront again. Whether it'll be massive enough to really correct things, I don't know, or maybe it'll just be a transient.
I want to go back to your book in the presidency. You said you were genuinely surprised the first time you heard the words President Carter.
Well, I was. All the way through our campaign, we never referred to the word president. We just said we were running for national office.
We wouldn't even say the word.
No, we didn't say the word. And so, I don't say we never said the word, but we were embarrassed to say, I'm running for president. We just said, I'm running for national office. And then when the priest, I think from Minneapolis or of Minnesota anyway, said, you know, God bless President Jimmy Carter, it was kind of a shock to me. But I felt ready for it and prepared for it.
And those first few days and first years, you tried to get so much done, but you also wrote that last year in the White House, the most stressful.
It was the worst year of my life. We're having the hostages held by Iran and then having the Soviet Union invade Afghanistan. But I'd say primarily the hostages, yes.
And you were facing a lot of pressure, even Roslyn.
That's right.
Suggesting that you should go strike.
Well,
you were holding back.
Most of my advisors, I would say, wanted me to take military action against Iran. But I was against what I wanted to do, and I felt then and still feel that if we had attacked Iran, they would have responded by killing our hostages. So
although you did tell them if they harmed a single hostage.
We told them that a month after they took the hostages, in late November. I sent word to the Ayatollah Khomeini through Germany and through other means that I knew would get to him that if he injured a hostage, we would close all access by Iran to the outside world. We would block off their ports and not let them take off any airplanes. And if he killed a hostage, we would attack militarily. And I meant what I said, and I think he believed it. So he was very careful never to harm any hostage.
You said you don't know for sure why the Ayatollah held the hostages till after.
No, I don't.
You were out of office. But what does your gut tell you?
I don't want to comment on that, you know.
Because that makes me think you do know.
No, I don't really know. There have been books written about it. Gary Sick wrote a book about it and so forth.
The October Surprise.
But I spent 3 days and nights, my last 3 days and nights as president. I never went to bed. I never lay down on the bed. I just stayed up and negotiated. And we had all the hostages in an airplane at the end of a runway in Tehran about 9 o'clock that morning, just waiting to take off. And I kept waiting for them to take off. They didn't. And it was about 5 minutes after I was no longer president that we got the word that the hostages were free. And I'd say that was probably the most happy moment of my life.
Of your life?
Yes, I think it was. Maybe except marrying Rosalind, but, you know, yes.
Let's talk about Rosalind. You actually met her in her crib.
I did.
And you celebrated your 69th anniversary this week.
Yesterday, as a matter of fact, yes.
What's the secret?
Secret to, well, I knew her when she was born, and but she was 3 years old, younger than I was, so we had a lot of difference between us as high school kids. I started dating Rosalind because my regular girlfriend, who was Miss Georgia Southwestern College, and a beauty queen.
You still remember that, huh?
Well, yeah, she had a family reunion the last night I was home on my first class vacation from Annapolis. And so I asked Rosalind on a blind date and fell in love with her that night. And then the following February, on Lincoln's birthday, Rosalind came up to Annapolis and I asked her to marry me, and she said no. And so from February till May, she maintained no, and she dated all the other boys that were available in the county. Not many of them, just four else.
She taught you a lesson.
I was really humbled and pleading and trying to put on my, you know, best facet for her. And she finally agreed in May to marry me.
And you write some fascinating things about that I think anyone can learn from about marriage in this. You say that at the beginning of your marriage, you made all the decisions.
I did.
Kind
about
of traditional.
About the first 17 or 18 years.
It's a long time. What changed?
You know, I don't know, because it's impossible for me now to conceive of my deciding to resign from the Navy, which was a life-changing experience for our family, and not even ask Rosalind or tell Rosalind.
She was angry about it, you
know. She was very angry, and she stayed angry for about a year.
A year?
Yeah. She was alienated from me. She thought I had betrayed her best interest. Anyway, and then when I decided to run for the state senate, I went into the house and to take off my work clothes and put on a coat and tie, and she asked me if I was going to a funeral or something that she didn't know about it. I said, no, I'm going to qualify to run for the state senate. That's the first time I ever mentioned it to her. But those times are gone forever. And what changed that was that she began to work as a partner with me in our little business. I didn't have any employees except Rosalind volunteered to work in the afternoon so I could go out and meet with customers. And she became so valuable to me and the business, I finally realized to my shock and a little bit embarrassment that she knew more about the business than I did, because she kept the books and she knew all the customers and so forth. So when we got involved in running for office, particularly governorship and then later president, she was a full-time partner with me, and she really liked politics better than I did. All facets of it, the fundraising, the campaigning, the planning, the strategy.
Former President Carter with our George Stephanopoulos, and you'll hear more of that conversation in a moment. President and Mrs. Carter celebrated 75 years of marriage in July of 2021. Our Steve Osunsami sat down with the couple as they reflected on the milestone.
This 75 years of marriage, what advice do you have for people who want to make it last?
Well, let me take the first step. First of all, choose the right person and help when you can. Share things a lot.
And do things together. We look always looking for to do things, for find things we can do together.
Yeah.
Like fly fishing and bird watching and just going out to the pond,
yeah,
catch a fish.
And every night we try to make sure we are completely reconciled from all the arguments during the day.
Okay.
When we go to bed. We also read the Bible every night. And we've done that for 60 years, probably. So we try to share what we can.
It's hard to go to sleep angry if you've read the Bible.
So never go to bed angry.
Try not to.
Yeah.
This ABC News special, Remembering President Jimmy Carter, continues after this.
Inside a dimly lit room at the LBJ Library in Austin, Texas, a motion sensor triggers a recording, and a voice fills the room.
Suddenly, there was a sharp, loud report. A shot.
It's the voice of Lady Bird Johnson, the wife of Lyndon Johnson.
He wants to get out. There is no way out.
Lady Bird recorded her entire experience in the White House, hours and hours of tape that almost no one has ever heard. And those tapes, they end up rewriting history. This is a story about one of the most influential members of the administration, even if we never knew it.
I wrote out for Lyndon about a 9-page analysis of what I thought his situation was.
From Best Case Studios and ABC Audio, listen to In Plain Sight, Lady Bird Johnson, available now wherever you listen to podcasts.
I am Kate Gibson, and I hope I don't regret starting a weekly podcast with my father, Charlie Gibson.
Thanks, kiddo. On our new ABC Audio podcast, The Bookcase, with Kate and Charlie Gibson, we will have conversations with our favorite new and established writers, as well as book lovers and booksellers.
There's nothing more delicious than spoon-feeding yourself every word of a wonderful novel.
New episodes of The Bookcase with Kate and Charlie Gibson are posted every Thursday.
Wait a minute. You mean now I can listen to GMA any time of the day, anywhere?
Yes, that's exactly what we mean with the new Good Morning America podcast.
Listen to all of GMA served up daily straight to you.
Oh, Michael.
What? I'm listening to our new GMA podcast. You guys, it's really good.
Listen to the Good Morning America podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Subscribe now. It's really good.
In every story, there's that moment.
This is not supposed to happen to you.
That mind-blowing twist.
Oh, my God.
That you never see coming.
What did you think had happened?
Where everything changes. Secrets, passion, betrayal. On the edge of your seat drama. And just when you think you know the whole story.
Just when we thought things couldn't get any worse, we would find something else out.
See what's next. Friday nights mean 2020 at 10, 9 Central on ABC.
People do some pretty cool things in their 40s and 50s. Why should saving for retirement be any different? I mean, they go back to college, learn new instruments, start skateboarding. Okay, maybe that one's not for everybody, but saving for retirement is. With aceyourretirement.org, you can get on track with your retirement savings no matter your age. Just have a 3-minute chat with Avo, the friendly digital retirement coach from AARP. You'll get personalized recommendations based on your input that are easy to understand and work with your lifestyle. It's quick, easy, and free. Plus, it's sponsored by AARP, so you know they got your back.
Snarly move, Dad.
Thanks, sweetie.
So wherever you are in your retirement savings journey, head to aceyourretirement.org and start chatting with Avo today. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Your body contains up to 70% water. It's what you run on. So when you feel like you're running low, have a glass. And recharge your body. You're gonna drink something, and what you drink is up to you. When you drink water, you drink up.
What if I told you, in Iran, women are banned from going to soccer games?
Mom, take the ball. I love you.
For 43 years, Iranian women have fought back.
Police pushed us.
Troops.
This is their story.
The joy was forbidden.
What is the meaning of that?
That is how they control you.
I'm Shimol Yai. Listen to the new 30 for 30 podcast, Pink Card, available now.
In every story, there's that moment.
This is not supposed to happen to you.
That mind-blowing twist.
Oh my God!
That you never see coming.
What did you think had happened?
Where everything changes. Secrets, passion, betrayal. On the edge of your seat drama. And just when you think you know the whole story.
Just when we thought things couldn't get any worse, we would find something else out.
See what's next. Friday nights mean 2020 at 10, 9 Central on ABC.
Listening to an ABC News special, Remembering President Jimmy Carter. Once again, here is correspondent Aaron Katursky
Even though Jimmy Carter served only one term as president, he never stopped serving his country. He remained on the world stage wherever he thought he could make a difference. More from ABC's Juju Chang.
Former President Jimmy Carter played statesman and peacemaker around the world. Whether it was a battle over a ballot box, calming nuclear saber-rattling, or facing down warring enemies. After the U.S. invaded Panama, the former president in 1989 led the first election observation mission to Panama.
How many people on the voter list for this mess?
Taking on dictators like Manuel Noriega for stealing free elections from the people.
It was obvious from all of our observations and the subsequent analyses that the people voted about 3-1 in favor of ending the dictatorship and for the opposition parties.
His mission through the Carter Center in Atlanta helped the organization become a leader in election observation.
Do you have the voter ID cards here?
Yeah.
You have those?
Monitoring more than 100 elections in Africa, Latin America, and Asia. Carter documented his efforts in Indonesia in his 2007 memoir, Beyond the White House.
The people of Indonesia are providing a dramatic example of peaceful political change and firmly negating the claim that Muslim societies are averse to democratic governments. This is a good message for the world to absorb.
He also played a key role in brokering peace talks in the former Yugoslavia between the warring factions of Bosnia, Serbia, and Croatia in 1994, which eventually led to the Dayton Peace Accords. That same year, another diplomatic success. The former president helped the U.S. government settle a tension-filled nuclear weapons dispute with North Korea, meeting with then-North Korean President Kim Il-sung. The result? The first official talks between the two countries in 40 years and an agreed framework on nuclear weapons.
And I'd like to inform you that they have stopped the sanctions activity in the United Nations.
More than a decade later, Citizen Carter was back in Pyongyang on a private humanitarian mission, winning the release of an American teacher facing 8 years in prison for allegedly crossing into North Korea. In 2002, Carter became the first U.S. president, former or current, to visit Cuba since Calvin Coolidge traveled there in 1928.
For el señor presidente Castro, para que yo visite a Cuba.
And he showed no signs of letting up. Another mark of his legacy, traveling all over the world with Rosalind by his side to eradicate disease.
To all the children, that they will have this terrible disease in their bodies reduced dramatically. May God go with all of you and be a blessing on everyone in this country. Thank you very much.
His work through the Carter Center becoming the motto for his legacy, waging peace, fighting disease, and building hope. Pioneering a model of post-presidential activism that few can match.
Well, my dreams of the future of the world are based on my religious and political philosophies and faith. I worship the Prince of Peace. And to enhance the prospects of peace and to remove the blight of war and the threat of war would be the overwhelming dream that I would have.
Our thanks to Juju Chang for that report. Faith was the cornerstone of President Carter's life, and though his health in recent years forced him to cut back on his travel, Carter still managed to teach Sunday school at home in Plains, Georgia. The crowds grew so big after his 2015 cancer diagnosis, many camped out overnight in the church parking lot just to hear him speak. Mark Updegrove, the author and presidential historian, knew Jimmy Carter well, and he joins us now. Mark, tell us how we should remember the late president. It really seemed he came to define what an ex-president can be.
Jimmy Carter became in his post-presidency what he wanted to be in his presidency, the person who was out there trying to wage peace and health throughout the world. The things that he did under the auspices of the Carter Center, which included the eradication of little-known but pervasive third-world diseases like guinea worm disease and river blindness, and also the work that he did for Habitat for Humanity, banging nails to put up houses for the underclass. These were remarkable contributions, and we never saw any former president do things like that in his hands-on a way as Jimmy Carter.
And what about his presidency as we now reassess it posthumously. Is it better? Was it better than perhaps he was given credit for at the time?
I think that there are certain contributions that he made during the course of his presidency that certainly hold up. If you look at the remarkable peace agreement that he negotiated between Israel and Egypt, which stands today, that is an astounding foreign policy contribution. Who knew that we could repair the divide between those two countries and come up with an agreement, again, that has stood the test of time? I think that there were certainly failures of the Carter administration that weigh down his presidency. I think historians will certainly see it that way, including the way that the Iran hostage crisis was handled, as for nearly 2 years we had 52 American hostages taken by Iran in Tehran. That was an interminable period as far as Americans were concerned. And it came at a time when our faith in ourselves as a people was ebbing. And I'm not sure Jimmy Carter helped to boost our spirits during that time that we now call a time of malaise.
People didn't take too kindly to hearing that from their president.
He made a speech in which he took the American people to task for being in the dumps and tried to build their spirit. And it was called later the malaise speech by the press. But interestingly enough, Jimmy Carter never uttered that word during the speech, but it did sort of characterize the mood in the country at the time.
I'm also struck, as we remember Jimmy Carter, just what an anachronism he now seems to be, a president who was a Democrat from Georgia. Given the makeup of the country and the electorate, that seems like impossible now.
Well, it was at a time when almost everybody in the South was part of the Democratic Party. There was at a time before or just after the passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which would ultimately flip the Southern states from Democrat to Republican. But Jimmy Carter is remarkable insofar as he rises to the presidency as a one-term governor from the state of Georgia. He became the first president that we elected from the Deep South since Zachary Taylor in 1850. And it represents the emergence in so many ways of the new South. Jimmy Carter personified that in so many ways.
How well should we remember him, Mark?
Well, I think he was a remarkable humanitarian, and not only was our 39th president, but was a Nobel Peace Prize recipient. Carter left the White House in 1981, not knowing what he would do with the rest of his life. He just served one term, fully expected to serve two, left the White House with an unfinished agenda, and 21 years later was a Nobel Peace Prize recipient. That is remarkable. When you consider this incredible man's life. So I think he would want to be remembered for his contributions both in the White House and out of the White House, for the contributions, indelible as they were, in peace and human rights.
The presidential historian Mark Updegrove remembering Jimmy Carter, who has died. We'll hear more from the late president himself when this ABC News special continues.
You may know the story of Emmett Till, the 14-year-old boy who was brutally beaten and murdered in Mississippi. But you might have never heard his story if it weren't for one woman, his grieving mother, who turned her son's death into a rallying cry for justice.
A voice sent to me, the world will cry for Emmett Till.
From ABC Audio comes Reclaimed, the story of Mamie Till Mobley. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Wait a minute. You mean now I can listen to GMA any time of the day, anywhere?
Yes, that's exactly what we mean with a new Good Morning America podcast. Listen to all of GMA served up daily straight to you.
Oh, Michael.
What? I'm listening to our new GMA podcast. It's really good.
Listen to the Good Morning America podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Subscribe now. It's really good.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time. Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
In a small, close-knit community in Kansas, a group of men started meeting in secret. They were plotting an attack on a local Muslim community, one that could have killed hundreds.
It would have completely shaken the foundation of America
if it hadn't been stopped by one man. Truth and Lies, The Informant, a five-part series from ABC Audio. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. The craziest thing was believing that your dad knew everything. So as a dad, you felt like you had to know everything. You had to get everything right. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then, you know, it kind of starts to work itself out. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The website fully crashed!
A nightmare.
So what went wrong?
Everything.
When you hear the name Ye or Kanye West, how do you guys react? Is Ye an anti-Semite?
Nobody crawls into a barrel and shoots themselves in the head. That's a mob hit.
I wanted a little cushion for the push-in. If you get queasy, close your eyes right now.
If it's what everyone's talking about, it must be Impact by Nightline. Feel the impact. Now streaming on Hulu.
You're listening to an ABC News special. Remembering President Jimmy Carter. Once again, here is correspondent Aaron Katursky.
Jimmy Carter has died. He didn't hail from a political family, and his path to Pennsylvania Avenue took several twists and turns, from the Navy to farming to business, all before his name was on a ballot. The 39th president came into office new to Washington, and his honeymoon was short. Energy prices soared. He encouraged Americans to conserve. But his frank talk about the state of the country sharply contrasted with Ronald Reagan's optimism. When he sat a number of years ago with our George Stephanopoulos, he was asked why he didn't win re-election in 1980.
What's the reason?
I think the hostages. You know, the anniversary of their taking of the hostages happened to be on election day. I think November the 3rd. And all the buildup was there. Walter Cronkite every night was saying so many days and so forth, and ABC and NBC and all were talking about it. And we thought until the last minute that we would have the hostages out. We were negotiating with the Iranians then. And about 10 days before the election, it was exactly tied. And at the end, the whole country was distressed that we didn't get the hostages out.
How much do you think about what might have been, what a second term would have looked like?
Looking back on it, I wouldn't change it. I think Rosen would, but I wouldn't.
What would she change?
Well, she always has thought we'd be better off had we had a second term. But the life we've had since then, 35 or more years, at the Carter Center has opened up a new opportunity for us to serve around 80 countries in the world. So we're doing some things that we couldn't have done as president. But I think that if I had been elected president, I would have been able to conclude the reality of the Camp David Accords in Israel versus Palestine. Because Menachem Begin and the Knesset, the government of the Department of Israel, had agreed to give the Palestinians full autonomy and to withdraw from the occupied territories and to honor United Nations Resolution 242. When I left the White House, that whole momentum died down. The peace treaty between Israel and Egypt has survived. Not a word has ever been violated.
You know, you've lived longer than any other ex-president, done the work at the Carter Center. The post-presidency's almost become an institution, hasn't it?
It has, yeah, partially since I started it off. But I think now most every president has decided to do what they wanted to independently and differently. You know, of course, Reagan and George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush and Clinton, you know, have all done different things. And I think that's about like five different people that walk down the street. They're different from one another, but they all have to some degree. And effectively, I think all of them have utilized the experience and the prestige and of having been the president of a great country.
You know, you recently said that you and Rosalynn are prepared in a religious and psychological way for what comes next.
That's true.
How do you get there?
Well, it's hard. I'm not eager to get there. You know, I'm talking about first of all, I'm just as active now as I was 25 or 30, 40 years ago. But I know that in a few years, that my travel capability and my vigor, physical vigor, is going to die down. So the Carter Center is going to be turned over to other people to do, and then I'll have more time with Rosen at home and in my wood shop making furniture and painting pictures and looking at birds and to go into my farm the farm that we have now we've had since 1833 and we still grow peanuts and cotton and corn on it, so we still go to the farm a lot. So we'll have a nice time in our little hometown of Plains, more and more concentrated near home because we can't travel as much.
Make a full life even more full.
Well, I think so. It's been the best part of my life since I left the White House, but I really have been both gratified and honored and pleased and excited to be the president of a great country.
Jimmy Carter with ABC's George Stephanopoulos. When Carter announced in August 2015 that he was battling cancer, he did what no president had done before. He addressed the country personally about his illness. He was frank, as he was during his one term in office that was marked by historic accomplishment and monumental challenge. Ann Compton covered the Carter White House for ABC News, and she's with us now. Ann, what was he like to cover?
Jimmy Carter at first, especially on his presidential campaign, gave us tremendous access. He was a man of the people. He let the press hang around him all the time. He would walk through the peanut fields and pull a plant out of the ground and say, look here, Ann, look at this is what the peanuts look like. They're not quite ready for harvesting. When he got to the White House, his aides were young and not experienced in Washington, and we had lots of access to them. And President Carter decided that the news coverage was important. This, of course, predated all of the cable television and all of the tweeting and the social media of today. As president, Jimmy Carter decided that every 2 weeks he would have a formal White House news conference during business hours. He felt it was part of the job of the president because the only way he could get his message across to the country was through the mainstream media.
Ann Compton sharing her memories of covering the Carter White House for ABC News. As we've been remembering, Jimmy Carter kept making a big impact even after leaving the Oval Office. A lot of that centered on his work for Habitat for Humanity. My colleague Byron Pitts now.
It was 1984, not long after the once most powerful man in the world put down his pen to pick up a hammer. Only 56 when he left office, joining Habitat for Humanity, building homes for those in need.
All I'm running for is to get this apartment finished. I'm not going to get back involved in politics at all.
Wife Rosalyn by his side every step of the way.
He's worked probably an hour more than I have ever worked.
The couple first crisscrossing America, later expanding their mission overseas.
We're already working in Guatemala, Peru, Haiti, Bolivia, Zaire, Zambia, Uganda, Kenya, India, as well as 50 other places in the United States.
Meeting some of the world's most vulnerable, determined to make a difference, one wall, one roof, one home at a time.
One thing that Habitat does better than any organization I know, it lets you connect with people who are different from you in a very, you know, humbling way, but also a very gratifying and enjoyable way.
Even after he took a bad fall at home in 2019, the bruised and bandaged former president was back on the job a day later in Nashville, Tennessee, never missing a beat.
Had to go to the hospital, and they took 14 stitches in my forehead, and my eye is black, as you notice. But I had a number one priority, and that was to come to Nashville to build houses.
For nearly four decades, the Carters, joining 100,000 volunteers to build, renovate, and repair more than 4,300 homes in 14 countries.
Everybody believes in human rights, and I think one of the fundamental human rights, perhaps more important to very poor people than anyone, is to have a decent place to live.
Their work, helping Habitat for Humanity become internationally recognized for building decent and affordable housing, and inspiring the next generation of movers, shakers, and builders.
These Habitat projects have also been a deep emotional experience, not only for us and all the other thousands of volunteers who go with us, but especially to the families who've had their lives transformed.
Our thanks to ABC's Byron Pitts. I'm Aaron Katursky. We leave you now with the late president in his own words.
I've wanted to serve as president because I love this country and because I love the people of this nation. We've stood for and we fought for and we have achieved some very important goals for our country.
America did not invent human rights. In a very real sense, it's the other way around. Human rights invented America.
As my high school teacher, Miss Judy Coleman, used to say, we must adjust to changing times and still hold to unchanging principles.
From the bottom of my heart, I want to express to you the gratitude I feel. Thank you, fellow citizens, and farewell.
ABC News, honored for the third year in a row with five Murrow Awards for Excellence in Audio, including Overall Excellence in Network Radio. ABC News, America's number one choice.